Noon having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order and welcome members. As you look at the agenda, we are actually going to reverse those bills. So House File 2125 will be considered first, and House File 2169 will be done second as we look to get an amendment all in the right shape. We do have a quorum, and so Representative Les Legarde moves to approve the Tuesday, April 9th, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on those minutes? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the April 9th, 2019 minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. The April 9th, 2019 minutes are approved. So at this time, I'm going to move House File 2125 to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with that, I will then move the H2125DE1 amendment for, no, just to House File 2125. So with that, and I'll have.
Well, we can clarify there.
Okay. So that we have the bill before us, members. There'll be plenty of debate later on in the DE1 amendment, but I'd ask for your approval at this point as we can move it forward. So seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the H2125 DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion does prevail. The H2125 DE1 amendment is adopted. All right. And now we will go to amendments, and we have an author's amendment. And I think that being passed around at this point. I'll wait for members to get this before I move it. And then I'm going to ask if staff would walk through the, it's going to be the A18 amendment once we get it moved. And that'll be, Sean, that'll be you to join. Members, I'm going to move the A18 amendment. Do all members have a copy at this point?
Yes.
Very good. So I'm going to ask Mr. Williams if he would please describe what's in the A18 amendment. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and members, you have in front of you, I hope, a memo we put together describing the changes in the A18 amendment, so I'm going to walk through using that as a document. I'll note the pages and lines, but I'm going to be referring, it's a little confusing, I'm going to be referring to the pages and lines in the amendment and not the underlying DE amendment that was just adopted. And I'm going to cover all these, the first half of the amendment, but there may be, this is kind of a team effort, so there may be questions about specific provisions that I'll kind of kick over to other members from House Research. So starting on page 1, line 3 of the amendment, there's language there that's just correcting a cross-reference that was erroneous in the underlying amendment. Page 1, lines 4 through 7, there were some technical changes to the dependent exemption section. There was some unnecessary language related to the phase-out threshold. Page page 1, lines 8 and 9, corrects a technical issue in the provision indexing the itemized deduction limitation for inflation. Page 1, line 10, fixes another broken cross-reference. Page 1, lines 11 through 18, that adopts language that essentially makes the standard deduction the default election for the purposes of the individual income tax rather than the itemizing deduction. Page 2, lines 1 through page 3, line 4, adds two sections relating to the historic structure credit to clarify the position in the House bill, which is that the state will be allowing the credit to be taken the year the project is placed in service and not taken ratably over 5 years. Page 3, line 5 through 7, clarifies that the qualified business income deduction for pass-through businesses is added back for the purposes of the individual AMT. Page 3, line 9 through line 30, has some language clarifying that when you're determining the income limit for the interest deduction, that's a change that's adopted through the TCJA, an insurance company's income, that if the insurance company pays the premium tax under state law, that company's income is also part of the calculation to determine the amount of interest you're allowed to deduct. Page 3, lines 31, or line 31 through page 4, line 16, add some language relating to the income tax withholding rules. That's just to account for the new standard deduction and dependent exemption amounts. Page 4, lines 17 through 20, add some language excluding alimony paid from the definition of household income for the property tax refund program. The TCJA changed whether or not the federal rules for whether or not alimony was included in FAGI, so this is sort of just corresponds to some existing language in the amendment requiring taxpayers to add that back for the purposes of determining household income. Page 4, line 21 corrects an erroneous cross-reference. It looks like page 4, lines 21 through 24, so there may be an error in the memo. Let me check here. So that's 22 through 24. Those are technical changes to the preferential rate income tax section. It just adds a new cross-reference to the tax on composite returns. It corrects another broken cross-reference and changes, clarifies the effective date. Page 4, lines 25, line 25 through page 5, line 1, simplifies the definition of eligible individual for the purposes of the stillbirth credit. Page 5, lines 2 through 13, includes tax expenditure statements for the angel credit provision and the medical cannabis subtraction that are added in the bill. So there's a requirement that bills adding or renewing tax expenditures include a purpose statement. So this just adds the purpose statements for those provisions. Page 5, line 14 through 26, this is a DOR suggestion to include ambulance and first responder exemptions, essentially by expanding a current exemption rather than creating a new subdivision in law. Page 5, lines 27 through page 7, lines 19 of the amendment, add purpose statements for the tax expenditures in the sales tax article. That's corresponding to the same requirement I mentioned earlier, that all tax expenditures include a purpose statement. Page 7, line 20 through 21, and also lines 26 through 29, modify the effective date for the direct ship winery provisions, that they're contingent on enactment of the proposed law. So there's language in the public safety finance bill sort of authorizing this, and this would just make the tax provisions effective contingent upon the enactment of the provisions that are in the public safety bill. Page 7, lines 22 to 25. Changes the effective date of provision relating to the repeal of a requirement that distributors of petroleum furnish a bond to ensure payment of petroleum taxes. I think it's changing it to the day following file enactment rather than July 1, 2019. And I'm going to hand it over to Ms. Hagler to discuss the second half of the amendment.
Ms. Hagler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Okay, so page 7, line 30 through page 9, line 28, is removing the exemption of certain counties to not that don't contain independent soil and water conservation districts from the tax increase to the solid waste management tax. So this just kind of reverts that language back to the original bill's language, where it's just raising the rates for all counties. Page 9, lines 29 through 30 correct the name of Board of Water and Soil Resources. In the amendment, some of those words were flipped. Lines 31 on page 9 through line 4 on page 10 requires Bowser to allocate money directly to a county rather than a soil and water conservation district in the instances where a county does not contain an independent soil and water conservation district. And then line 5 on page 10 removes the requirement that Bowser use the money in the soil and water conservation account that was created for competitive grants to those districts, and removes the requirement that the home county match the awarded grant amount. Lines 6 and 7 on page 10 change the effective date of the provisions related to the petroleum bonds from July 1 to day following final enactment. Line 8 on page 10 removes language related to the senior deferral program that's moved to the senior deferral section of statute. And line 9 clarifies that linking parcels for ag homestead purposes is only allowed for other agricultural land, not non-agricultural land. Lines 10 and 11 clarify that property qualifying for the elderly living facility deferral is only required to file an initial application and is not subject to application requirements of exempt properties. Lines 12 through 14 clarify the homestead market value exclusion if the ownership percentage cannot be determined by land records, then the ownership percentage are determined based on equal shares. Lines 15 through 17 clarify that for ag homestead market value credit, the same thing. If ownership percentage cannot be determined by land records, then it defaults to equal shares. Lines 18 on page 10 through line 4 on page 11 require the property tax data reported to the Department of Revenue by utility companies that are cooperative associations be aggregated to unique taxing jurisdiction level, and it also requires that the data reported exclude information related to distribution line property, which is subject to the in-lieu taxes rather than property tax. Lines 5 through 10 move language related to the senior deferral program to the senior deferral section of statute. Lines 11 through 27 add a section clarifying that caps on LGA losses are adjusted when extra off-formula aid payments expire. Lines 28 on page 11 through line 5 on page 12 adds technical amendment to the taxpayer assistance grants that was adopted in tax committee. Line 6 on page 12 through line 11 on page 13 adds in the lodging tax provision from the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill, but clarifies that this change does not reflect on the question of whether travel intermediary services are subject to those taxes prior to the change. And that concludes the author's amendment.
Representative Swasinski, did you have a
question? I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions on that? And I think we tried to clean some things up. There was a question on with PRISM dealing with co-ops, and I think we've worked with folks on that language. We think we're good there for the co-ops. All right. So seeing no further debate on that. All those in favor of the A18 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The A18 amendment is adopted. Thank you, members. Next one we're going to look at is the A4 amendment. This is Representative Petersburg. Representative, would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the H2125A4 amendment, please.
Very good. Please explain.
This is a situation that every once in a while happens. The city of Waubun, who I believe is in Representative Green's district, for one reason or another, missed some deadlines in getting its paperwork filed for LGA and small city assistance aid programs, and this just allows them to extend that as long as they get the paperwork in by May 31st, so they don't lose on their LGA and small assistance payments. It was just an error, and I don't think the city should be penalized because of their mistake. It doesn't cost anything. It just means that they will actually get their funding that would normally have been appropriated to them. So I ask for your support.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you've been receptive to these types of things in the past. Ironically, I've done this before for the city of Oslo, and the reason I just stepped out is I got a call from the former mayor of Oslo, and he just wanted to inform me that they are becoming an island because of the Red River flooding, and they'll be an island for about a week to 10 days, he said. So these small cities, you know how they're manned and staffed and so forth, a lot of hardworking people that sometimes fall through the cracks and the paperwork doesn't get done, so I support the amendment. Thank you.
Very good. Representative Petersburg.
And I do want to mention that they didn't get the deadline in, but I believe they have the paperwork already filed, so it fits within all of this, and everything should be good to go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. And members, we have done this numerous times in the past, and so thank you for bringing this forward, and I'd ask members to vote yes. So any further discussion on the A4 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does prevail. The A4 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A9, Representative Davids. The A9 amendment. Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could start by making an oral amendment on page 6. If you'll look, there's a blank. I generally don't like passing bills with blanks. And so we would insert on 6.16, $50 million, and then on page 9.2, $50 million, basically stating that each system would have to show $50 million of investment before other funds could be released from other entities. But I would like one thing.
Chair David, could you give me those lines again? So
certainly.
6.16.
6.16,
you would insert $50 million.
$50 million, and then 9.20.
All right, just
$50 million.
9.20. Okay.
But if I could ask staff here to clarify something.
You bet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to our staff, maybe Ms. Dalton.
Ms. Dalton,
I'd like to clarify something on this. By putting the $50 million, as I've suggested here, can each entity, basically we're looking at the district of East and West, and we're looking at St. Luke's, and we're looking at Essentia, would each entity be able to move separately once the $50 million is met for that entity?
Ms. Dalton?
Members, I don't want to hold up one. If the other, if let's say St. Luke's is first, let them go if Essentia hasn't made it, or vice versa. I think they'll both make it very quickly.
Thank you.
But I just want to make, and maybe we could talk about that.
Ms. Stoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I think the $50 million is $50 million total. It does not say that it has to come from one or the other party. It's just from all private sources within the district.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dalton. And I just want to make sure that's clarified so we know where we're headed with this. But I'm very excited to carry this amendment, the H212589 amendment, which I'll move here. And a little history. I know you probably don't want a history lesson, but you're going to get it anyways. In 2011, in the tax bill, there was a little project in the southeast called Destination Medical Center. That was started, believe it or not, by the 2011 tax bill, where there's provision put in the sales tax collected by the city of Rochester that they would use $20 million to start DMC, as we'll refer to it. And then we lost the majority in 2012. It really hurt my feelings. And so I went to the mothership at Mayo, and I said, you need a good DFL author. There's two I can think of. One would be Representative Liebling, one would be Representative Norton, who's now the mayor. And it just worked out that it happened to be Representative Norton. Was able to get it, and I was on the bill, supported it, and we went through. And the rest is basically history. It's been a tremendously successful program.
You wouldn't believe the cranes, if you look at the skyline of Rochester, that are out there. It's just been an amazing, amazing success, and it's just going to do nothing but get better. That being said, what we're trying to do here for Duluth, and last year we came this close. I mean, it's the last couple minutes of session we thought it was in. It ended up not being there, and I had a lot of help from the Duluth delegation, especially from Reps. Now Schultz, who helped with that last year. And what we'd like to do here is get this amendment passed to get the provisions for Essentia and St. Luke's, basically in East and West District, into the tax bill. We basically, with the this amendment, we're basically taking funds out, so we're not burdening at this point the bill with funds. Basically, the amendment takes all payments, bonds, payments, and provisions associated with them, removes the sales tax construction exemption, establishes the board and district, gives the city the same abatement and TIF provisions that Rochester got for Destination Medical Center, and requires that the city use $20 million of the new sales tax authority for road and bridge projects in the district. And so we have that language before you this time. And again, I want to thank Representative Schultz for allowing me to carry this amendment. I have been very, very supportive of this in the past. And as I said, last year you can't get any closer than we did. It was in the final negotiations, and I left the room thinking this deal was done, and it wasn't. So here we are today, and I'm excited to bring this forward for the consideration of the Tax Committee.
Chair Davids, thank you, and you have moved the A9 amendment. And I think what we will do is just incorporate on line 6.16, insert 50 million, and on line 9.20, insert 50 million, because A9 is an amendment to an amendment, and you can't do an amendment to an amendment to an amendment, I don't believe. So maybe there's no rules on that, but we'll just incorporate it just to be good on this, so we just have the amendment. Thank you, Chair Davids. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I encourage members to support this. We've been working on this all year. It's gone through at least five committees, and we're hoping to get this finalized this session. So I urge your support, and I'm open for questions if members have any.
Good piece of legislation.
I was informed that actually you can make an amendment, the oral amendment, because once we adopted the DE1, it became the foundational bill, and this is only a first-degree amendment. So let's do this properly then. So before we go back, so let's take the Davids oral amendment and vote on that. And so the Davids oral amendment is on 6.16, insert 50 million, and on line 9.20, insert 50 million. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The oral amendment is adopted. Okay. Back to the A9 amendment as amended. Yeah. Chair Davids.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd be remiss if I didn't again thank Representative Schultz, because she helped out last year. And like I said, we just about got there, and she's allowing me to put this work on this amendment in Tax Committee here, which I'm very appreciative for, because I think this is a very, very good deal for Duluth. And I've had folks like from St. Cloud and other regional centers come to me and say, well, why are you doing for Rochester? Why are you doing for Duluth? I say, you bring me the project, I'll carry the bill, I'll get Representative Schultz on it, and we'll go to town. Because what this does for economic development in an area, this will spur, well, I think just to start out, $800 million from Essentia, and I think St. Luke's testified in committee, they're looking at like $200 million. So that's $1 billion of economic development. And I'm not aware of, I haven't had anybody come to me saying they're in opposition to this. I think it's good. It's a good procedure. It's worked very successfully in the Southeast. Let's get it in the Northeast, and let's go to other areas in the state that have an interest like this, and let's get her done.
Very good. Any other further discussion on the A9 amendment as amended? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A9 amendment as amended. The motion prevails. The A9 amendment as amendment is adopted. Representative Loeffler, I hear you have an amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A10 amendment here. If the page could help, pages could help us hand it out.
What was that number?
A10.
We have the A10 amendment. It's been moved, but we will hold off until that is passed out.
That might have. No,
a different break. Different break. Same break.
Mr. Chair, while that's been handed out, I can briefly explain it. There was kind of a last-minute idea in the property tax division that as we're collecting information and asking the Department of Revenue to summarize it on what the real actual rents are using our certificate of rent paid process for the renter's credit program, the issue was raised as whether or not there were other databases that would have the same information and that we should look at those first. Well, we've since had people look at that, and it does not provide the comparable information across the state that some people thought it might. And so this just removes the reference saying they have to first look at these other databases.
And Representative Loeffler, and for members, I believe in the vision when we were marking that, this was a Representative Hertaus amendment. And we thought it, when we were looking at it, it would probably be okay. But it sounds like when we looked at it further, staff did, it just, it wasn't workable. Is that Representative Loeffler, or how does that
Mr. Chairman, that's right. And it references a couple of databases that people had thought were statewide and would give us that level of data, and they don't. They tend to focus on certain areas.
Very good. So any discussion, questions for Representative Loeffler on the A10 amendment? If not, I'm going to call, I'm sorry, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I'm kind of get caught here as to looking at the language here. Is this the one where we were trying to say if the United States Census Bureau could do this, and we didn't need to do it in place here?
Representative Petersburg, that's correct.
Okay, and why would we want to why would we want to add more cost and more stuff if we can already get the information? If Representative Loeffler may ask.
Yeah. Representative Loeffler, so why can't we use this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and because well, we do have a decennial census every 10 years, which is a complete count. There's a sampling process used in between, and it wouldn't give us the geographic information that would be useful, for example, in the human services budget in estimating its cost for people that we're supporting, that sort of thing.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, but if I read this right, this is permissive, meaning that you can do it one way or the other, so it wouldn't necessarily require us not to use that information, but would it?
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Petersburg. The information referenced would not meet the needs that this section of the bill seeks, and so that's why we're deleting it, just because it would require Department of Revenue to regularly check in on databases that we know are not collecting this information at the level that we would have otherwise.
Just
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. I would vote against this amendment because if I read 174.2, in which it says the data elements paragraph, if equivalent data is available from publicly accessed source, meaning then if you're in the middle of that process and it's still available and it's still equivalent and it's still accurate from the Census Bureau, we could use that. Otherwise, we may have to go to the other form. So I don't know why we would want to take that away during those times when an agency is already collecting that data. So that's my concern.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the other thing that I should point out is the way it's drafted is it's up to each individual owner to make that assessment rather than the Department of Revenue. And so it isn't really workable to have each individual property owner doing their own research, and their interest is only about filling out their form. It's not about whether that data is available for a county in northeastern or southeastern Minnesota. And so we really do want to have a uniform set of information on which to make decisions for the state.
Representative Peter.
Mr. Chair, I would just say I still disagree that we want to take this out. I think we want to keep this in and at least try and see how it works. And if we want to change how it's used, that may be better than just trying to eliminate this altogether. So I would ask for a no vote.
Is there any further discussion? So, members, I would ask for support of the A10 amendment. So I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
The motion does prevail. The A10 amendment is adopted. Next up, I have the A17 amendment, and this might be Chair David's A17.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the A17 amendment.
Very good.
And first of all, I owe this committee and every committee an apology on this. Well, not every committee, I guess this committee, because in the past on other committees, if you're the lead Democrat of the minority or the chair or whoever, you can ask for incidence analysis, and they're very important in what we do when we plan our bills, our amendments, and so forth. Well, in the tax area, now in other areas, it always says to the chair and the lead minority member, which we are the lead minority of minorities, so it would be of the us, not the four, it just to be clear. So as defined, the minority party would be the largest minority party in the House. And at this point, that would be the Republican minority here in the House. And normally, the chair or the lead can ask for information. And what this amendment does, when it comes to incidence analysis, the ranking minority member could ask for these things too. And what happened was, we ran into a situation where I wanted some information, and we went and the House research did what they're supposed to do and say, go pound sand. And they did it a little nicer than that. But I think we should do as other committees do, Mr. Chairman, where both sides can get that information requested, and because right now the hands are tied of research and they can't do it. Revenue for incidence analysis.
Yeah. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And as we all know, tax chairs tend to come and go and switch quite often.
Rub it in.
No, what I am saying is that I can very well work the other way. So I think this is a good amendment. I really do. I think there shouldn't be any reason that both sides should not be able to have the same information. So, members, I would ask for approval of the A17 amendment. Thank you for bringing this forward. So. Any further discussion? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on the A17 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A17 amendment is adopted. All right. Next up on the docket here, we have an A12 amendment. Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, this is a red tape amendment. The Minnesota Museum of American Art ran into some red tape with the State Office of Historic Preservation regarding tax credits. So this bill does not spend anything because it was already authorized previously in previous legislative sessions, both in bonding and taxes in 2017 and 2018, but they ran into some authorization. It's complicated, Mr. Chair, so I have a smart lawyer here. Who can explain it if the committee has questions, which they probably will. But it would allow them to apply these tax credits right away. If they don't get to do this because of the red tape with the State Office of Historic Preservation, it causes major issues for the bonding allocations that we passed in 2017 and 2018.
And Representative Lesh, did you want to move?
I would like to move it, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Lesh moves the A12 amendment. Staff, could you help us out kind of with the conundrum here, or what this would do exactly. So, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not certain what sort of existing rules are governing or preventing the particular project mentioned in the amendment from qualifying for the credit, but the text of the amendment says that if the project is consistent with the historic character of the certified structure as determined under Section 47 of the Internal Revenue Code, and that's the federal section of law that governs the federal historic structure credit, so if the project is consistent with that, the project qualifies for the state credit, sort of notwithstanding the existing rules for the state credit. That's how I understand the amendment.
And Representative Lesh, so that the credits have already been awarded and they just haven't been able to use them. Is that
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
That's my understanding, too. So.
That is accurate, Mr. Chair. And like I said, there's a smart lawyer here who can answer this if the committee has more detailed questions, but it's kind of dry.
Questions? Chair Davids.
Mr. Chair, I think this amendment was submitted by a smart lawyer, and I think it's a really, really good idea, because this can get caught up at times, and I think we need to move it forward.
Very good. Any other thoughts? Very good. If not, I'm going to call for a vote on the A12 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A12 amendment is adopted. Representative Loeffler, I hear you have another amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an A19 amendment.
All right. So we'll get that started to be passed out. So would you mind moving that?
I'll move the A19 amendment.
All right.
And
Representative Loeffler moves
the
A19
amendment.
As it's coming
about, I'll explain where this came from. We had a public finance bill. That's a typical bill that comes to the property tax division that has all kinds of unrelated things relating to the selling of bonds for schools and cities and counties and others. And I kind of came in at the last minute, so we didn't have much time to really think through a couple of provisions. So, and this one there was some questions on, and what it deals with is the ability of counties. We gave them the authority to have a half-cent transportation sales tax some years ago. They can use it for transportation, for roads, for bridges, or for transit. And now the counties would like to be able to sell bonds for those projects backed by that revenue stream of that sales tax, or backed also by the county's, you know, full faith and credit, because they can get a little bit better credit or interest rate from the bond companies if they pledge not just as a revenue bond but as a GO bond. And so this language has been worked out, I think, particularly staff from House Research. Both Chris Klayman and Pat Dalton had a role to play in it, and they've had meetings with representatives of a variety of counties to get the language clear. And what it does is in the first section, lines 1.4 through 1.16, the new language just makes it clear that they can fund more than one project. The original language referred to a specific project, and in most counties they have several different things that they want to fund with this sales tax, and so this just makes it clear. And then the second section, starting on 1.17, most of this is boilerplate that authorizes the counties to sell bonds to meet all the requirements of the bond in terms of using trustees and all the things that the bond houses tend to ask for. If you look under point E, which is lines 2.11 to 2.15, it says that they have to give a public notice to the public that what they're using the funds for before they sell the bonds. And on line 2.16 to 2.19, that they include these projects in their capital improvement plan so that there's a public process for being aware of this and input into the use of these bonds. And so that's what has been worked out between our House Research Department and the counties. And what it will do is it reduce the cost of borrowing when they want a bond for projects backed up with using this as a revenue source.
Thank you. So, Mr. Klayman, is this the GANS bonds that you were referring to yesterday? Is it some of this issue?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, this is a different issue than the GANS bonds.
Okay.
I believe the genesis of this language, this was included in the public finance bill that came through the property tax division, and most of the language, it has been amended since that time, but most of the language that you see in the second section of this amendment, beginning on line 1.17, that was language that was already in the CTIB bonding authority statute. So this was language that CTIB had for their bonding, and then that was CTIB was dissolved, and so the public finance article, as it sits in the bill now, clarifies that there is no CTIB, and now counties have all counties in Minnesota have the authority to use the transportation sales tax issue bonds. And this was a piece that was proposed an adjunct to that other authority. And basically what this would do is it would allow any county that has a transportation sales tax to issue bonds under this authority. I believe they can, counties can, they already do have some existing authority to do this. However, they have to either put a project in their capital improvement plan if it's for a road and bridge, or they have to form a joint powers agreement with a regional rail authority in order to do that. And as Representative Loeffler said, I believe that that could impose increased cost as well. So that's some context and some background for where this language is from and what it does.
Very good. Any other comments, questions on the A-19 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The A-19 amendment is adopted. Are there other? I have no more amendments up here. So if there's other amendments? Other amendments? All right, we'll go to third reading. So, discussion on the House File 2125 as amended. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, there's a few of my bills in here, and I appreciate your support for them and some of the adjustments. I would just say that I think with the amount of dollars that we had to work with and the things that we are doing in here, there are some things that I think are missing, or at least I think we need to keep on the front burner. One of those has to do with housing, and I was disappointed that we weren't able to get in some sort of incentive, some enticements for investments in low-income affordable housing, as well as workforce development housing in this bill. And so I think the program that we had tried getting into here that allowed people to invest in those programs is one that's missing. But I think it's a good program that we need to continue moving forward with. And so I hope in future years we can continue that process of looking at that as well. You know, I know that the majority has the vote and this will pass through, but I am concerned about its spending. I'm concerned about the amount of dollars that came out of out of transportation, in which we're going to have to now refill with gas tax increases. But I really think we need to continually look at the final product. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it up to others.
Very good. Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the pages are passing out a report here from Dr. Columbakidis. I got it down. I can't say so. Columbakidis. But, Mr. Chair, at the beginning of the year, we heard from the DFL and from various activists that we need to make the tax code more fair and progressive. We also heard from our good friends on the other side of the aisle that we need to raise more revenue to pay for ever-increasing spending. Finally, we heard from our friends that we needed to create a budget that was stable and didn't rely on gimmicks. Members, this bill accomplishes only one of these objectives. The bill that we'll be voting on in this committee, taxes, transportation, HHS, and jobs, have billions of dollars of regressive tax increases. When the tax incidence analysis comes back on those, it will show the poor middle class are getting hammered with new and increasing taxes. That's not fair. That's not progressive. Now, as far as the handout, in terms of budget stability, the bill we are hearing today does the exact opposite. The handout I've distributed was testimony from our state economist in 2015 in basically looking at two sections on how volatile corporate taxes are and capital gains taxes are. So they're wild swings up and down. You know, after a quarter when I pay my estimates, it goes way up, and then wait 2 months and you notice it goes down. But I must hand it to my friends on the other side of the aisle. They've accomplished their goal raising taxes. In fact, they raised them over $12 billion in all areas over the next 4 years with gas tax, sick tax, payroll tax, taxes on this, other taxes in this bill. Minnesotans will have government more and more in their pocket. Some would consider that wage theft, no matter how you slice it. Mr. Chair, I understand how this will play out as I sit here in the minority, but I also understand that we have just over a month left before we're set to adjourn for the year. And on the one hand, we have a budget that raises $12 billion in taxes, and I'm not saying just this bill, but the overall budget, in a very regressive way. On the other hand, we have a body that's committed towards raising no taxes. I wish you the very best, Mr. Chairman. Well, not too much luck here, but as you try to navigate through to find resolution, and as we've had conversations in the past, Mr. Chairman, we've said publicly, you have probably the toughest job in the House and probably in the legislature. I do want to thank you for the way you conducted the committee. You've been more than fair. It's just a matter of it's a little too coming for me. It's a little too big, but coming for me, that may not seem sincere, but a little too much spending, maybe a lot too much spending. But I look forward to working the rest of the way through the rest of the process. And again, Mr. Chairman, you and your staff have been more than fair and more than receptive, and that is certainly appreciated by this minority member.
Chair Davids, thank you for those comments, and thank you for your cooperation and work. It's been great working with you as the lead this year, and your forthright and honest, and we've had a number of discussions, and I just really appreciate that. That actually has gone back 19 years since I first started to serve, and goes back to a meeting back in 1991 when we were both mayors and at a mayor's conference in Fergus Falls, and I still remember that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other members' comments or questions or thoughts? So, well, thank you. Before I have some quick concluding thoughts here, I'd like to thank the staff. We're going to be having other meetings, but this is the bill that the staff will work the most directly on. So I really want to just individually thank folks, Christopher Kleiman, Alex Hagler, Cynthia Templin, Kathy Schill, Pat Dalton, Jared Swanson, Sean Williams. I think I have all the staff, and we've got Ellie Michael. Is where are you? There she is. Our Paige, who has done wonderful work. We have thank you to Ursula Griska for keeping me in line the first few days. I was talking about approving whatever I was approving, and not minutes at those times. Also, Partisan Research, Stephen Dad Rubis now, since the session began, and Sean Hingorn, thank you very much. And Nathan Jessen, who's done wonderful work here on all this. So these bills take a lot of work, as everybody knows, and I just really want to thank staff for your wonderful, wonderful work. And also, Ms. Thompson Spares from, I know, the Department of Revenue is here, and Commissioner's not here, but thank you for that. So it takes a lot of teamwork. And of course, members. You know, there probably weren't any surprises in the bill. I mean, everything that was in the bill we heard and had good discussion on, and so we tried to do that. Okay, so Representative Lessegaard.
Sorry, I probably should have said that earlier, Mr. Chair, but before I ever got here, I was told to look for individuals that had the integrity and how they treated people in the demeanor, right? And you exemplify leadership in ways that very few have. You're inclusive, how you talk to people that maybe not agree with you on all the issue, how you talk to us and mentor us, and you help us see things differently. And so from a leadership standpoint, from a growth and development standpoint, as a freshman, as somebody that is new to this world, I truly thank you for what you bring to this committee and to this body. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Lessegaard. Appreciate that very much. I'm hoping as we continue on here that we'll continue to work together and input. In this bill, there are 40 Republican provisions in the bill. And I, you know, we so, I mean, it's a lot, maybe not a lot of the big money items, but there are a number of items in the bill that it's very bipartisan. And I, as a committee, I think that was really, really important. And continue with tradition on hearing Chair Davids was the first bill, which actually is in the bill on, I think, the sales tax exemptions for medical facilities or ambulance and fire trucks and things like that. So members, you know, and I know there's some that certainly will have concerns. And when we came into this year, we really, as we looked ahead, the budget wasn't quite what we wanted. We have some surplus this year, but we, looking into the future, have deficits. And yet, as a state, what we need to do is continue on a good, positive path. I mean, we have to make sure that we have the best trained workforce for our economy. I mean, that's going to be crucial. We want to make sure that everyone has affordable and accessible health care. I think that's really important. And I want to make sure people have broadband economic development around the state. Lower tuition is really important. I think we all want stronger and safe communities around the state. I think that's very important. And so what this tax bill does is really provide the foundation and the investment so that we can do some of those things to continue to move Minnesota forward so that we can be the best that we can be. And we have put a real focus on trying to level the playing field for our working families and our senior citizens and our farmers and small businesses. And, you know, when you look at farmers, for example, they've had now 6 years in a row declining income, and it's the lowest it's been in 23 years. So we do some things in this bill. We do the ag to credit property tax relief, which I think is important. We do the full 179 expensing, which I think is really important. We look at a few other things. For seniors and working families, you do have the standard deduction that helps most folks. It will greatly simplify the tax code. That's important. We do have a little further, continuing on what Chair David started a few years ago. We've continued on with cutting some more taxes on the Social Security benefits that will help a number of senior citizens in that regard. And then we have added, through Chair Loeffler's committee, a lot of property tax relief, a lot of direct property tax relief on the homestead credit state refund, the renter's credit, local government aid to our citizens that also will further cut taxes for people. So we're trying to really look at those priorities of what the state needs to move forward, but also helping those folks, you know, again, the working families, the seniors, farmers and small businesses who need that help too. So members, appreciate all the work on this, and I know there will be much more discussion when we go to the House floor and so forth, but I want to thank everyone for all of your work. And you know, we're all here for the same reason, and we're hoping this tax bill will do this too, and that's to move the state forward and make the state as good as it can be. So with that, I would like to renew my motion to refer House File 2125 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. And so I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion does prevail, and the bill is off to Ways and Means. Oh, we've got to do 2169. We're not done for the day. So, so members, what you have forward is a House File 2169, which I will move to be referred to the General Register. Now, some might think this bill should have to go through the Transportation Committee also because it may have some wheels and tires on it. But at any rate, what it is the DOR Technical and Policy Bill minus, well, I'm going to add an amendment. Do I have to add the amendment? Right. So we're going to add an amendment in just a second that's going to take out the two controversial parts on partnership and on the lodging tax, the intermediaries and that. And so I'd like to offer that amendment right now. So
it does that?
Is that the A1?
Yeah. No? Okay.
A1.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, but I need that. So the amendment, very good, is Article 3 deals with the partnerships, and Article 5 deals with something negligible on vapor, and then the other areas are on the lodging area. So that's what the A2 amendment will do, is remove all that out of this bill to make it, should be totally non-controversial. So I'll move the A2 amendment. Any questions or comments? Well, no. All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion does prevail. The A2 amendment is adopted. So now we have the 2169. Any comments or questions on that? If not, we're going to vote on the, I'll renew my motion on House File 2169 as amended to be referred to the General Register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. Does prevail.
Tomorrow we're at 11:30.
All right, tomorrow, members, room 5, we've got two probably very non-controversial bills, so maybe if you can't make it in for the weather, you probably don't have to. It has something to do with transportation and health and human services. So just minor trivial, we're just going to move them right on. So we will start at 11:30 or as soon as we can after, well, no, not before 11:30, but if session would have to go longer, we'll move that around, but hopefully everyone have safe travels tonight. And again, thank you all.
We'll be here. Nobody else.
We are adjourned.